Excuse me, this is the operator, and I just need to inform all parties that today's conference call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect your line at this time, and you may begin.
Hi there, this is Robin Gross, and this is the meeting of the Non-Commercial Stakeholders Policy Committee. And today on our agenda, we've got talking about the proposals from last week presented by the business constituency and the intellectual property constituency to the ICANN board to change some of the rights protections mechanisms that have been included in the new GTLD applicant guidebook. So if anyone hasn't had a chance to see those yet, there is a copy of them on the ICANN correspondence page. But in short, there are eight new demands that have been put forth by the BC and the IPC as issues they want cleared up or they want some rules changed on before new GTLDs can be launched. And, you know, they've got businesses, huge businesses, banging on doors of the U.S. Commerce Department and other governmental officials in D.C. and, you know, really putting a lot of pressure on ICANN to try to change these mechanisms at the last minute to please the BC and the IPC. Well, the problem is a lot of these things, or at least a couple of these things that are being proposed, were already proposed and rejected by the community or negotiated away into other compromises that found their way into the STI report. And so there's a lot of concern among the community that the IPC and the BC here are reintroducing issues that they'd lost on before, and here it's, you know, the last shot, one last bite at the apple to try to get the kinds of privileges that they've been trying to get for a few years now, and so they're really putting in a lot of effort. They're working in these meeting groups, three different working groups this last week to come up with new proposals and strategize how to present these proposals to staff this week in Brussels. FADI has called, for those who don't know, FADI has called a meeting on Thursday and Friday of this coming week in Brussels to, quote, try to hammer out a framework for a solution for some of the new GTLD RPM mechanisms. So there's some concern because those invited to this meeting in Brussels are pretty much IPC and BC. There's about seven of them invited, and FADI called me and said we could send one person. Well, of course, we can't send anyone to Brussels this week. He needs to learn about our reality a little bit, which is we can't go flying around the world every time the IPC and the BC can to lobby him. So we won't probably have anyone in Brussels this Thursday and Friday to meet with him and the staff when the BC and the IPC are there to press for their new wish list as well as the ones they've asked for last week. So that's discouraging that this meeting is going forward in such an unbalanced and biased way that's likely to produce the results of reopening RPMs issues that were decided by the community in the STI report and elsewhere without the non-commercial users even having a chance to be there and to present the other side of the argument. So that's sort of the other piece of this, is that in addition to these eight known demands, there will be a couple more we can expect to see in the next couple of days going into Brussels as well. So that's just a whole lot of background, and probably it's duplicative for people who've already heard this, or maybe you haven't heard any of this, I don't really know. But does anyone have any questions on that or comments on that, on this background?
I'm sorry, Robin, yes, Maria. I guess my question would be, do we know anything about how or if or when any of what gets discussed this week would get fed back into the policy process?
Yeah. Well, I would imagine that, you know, assuming this meeting happens on Thursday and Friday, and the IPC and the BC are successful in convincing Fadi that he needs to reopen these issues, he has indicated that he would send instructions back to the GNSO. You need to reopen these issues and think about it from this perspective. So he said he would send it back to the GNSO if it gets reopened. However, it's a bit problematic to even consider the reopening of it in this way, especially since we can't even be there to present the other side of the argument.
Yeah.
That these things shouldn't be reopened, that they were already decided, that these 8 points, that at least several of these 8 points have already been asked for and rejected or compromised away. There won't be that voice at the table. So when Fadi's hearing, we need this, we need this, we need this, he's going to say, well, then let's do it.
And are any of the registrars going to the meeting?
Yes, there was one registrar invited, Jeffrey Eckhouse, mm-hmm. is the registrar invited, and Jeff Newman is the one registry person who's been invited as well.
Oh. I mean, yeah, it's just kind of bad luck for us, I mean, in all sorts of ways, but also because, you know, it means that if we're not careful, we're going to start off with Fadi on the wrong foot, being made to look as if we're you know, not constructive when obviously this whole thing is just an end run around the process.
Yeah, and that's sort of a concern I have right now, is that he already, I think, maybe feels that way, because I have raised some concerns about this meeting and expressed those concerns with him in email and with other members of the community about the unfairness of organizing this meeting in such a way that no non-commercial users can be there. But yet they're going to decide at this meeting whether or not they need to reopen the entire consensus compromise in favor of those who are at the meeting, but against those who can't be at the meeting. Obviously, that's so obvious to me that that's not a fair and proper way to do things. But I'll be honest, I don't know that he's grasped that yet. I think he thinks he's, you know, trying to work out a solution, and would we just stop complaining? But he needs to understand that the IPC and the BC is going in there with guns blazing, with new sets of demands, and we're not going to be there to present the other side of the argument. And they're there to lobby him, and you know, I don't think he really realizes that, and I'm concerned that he's going to open up this whole issue, these consensus positions up for renegotiation without one side of the table being there to argue against that. Now, he did say that he would allow us to have a sort of a separate meeting, but no details have been hammered out about when that would be, how that would be, what, you know, how we'd make that happen. So I'm not sure how much follow-through there'll be on his part with that, but we're definitely going to push for that, because obviously we got to have equal time as the IPC and the BC for advocating for these changes. We should need equal time to advocate for the consensus and what's in the applicant guidebook right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I guess we have to see what the two Jeffs managed to achieve this week.
Yeah, and I did speak to Jeff Newman the other day about this, and it was really interesting, because he said, you know, he was one of the originators of the idea of this meeting, and when it first came up, it was only supposed to be this technical meeting where they're going to explain some technical implementation issues to the ICANN staff, because they just don't understand some technical requirements or encryption issues, or, you know, that's how this meeting got started. Mm-hmm. But then once it got on the books, once the IPC and the BC had seven people meeting with Fadi on RPMs next week, well, they realized that this is more than an opportunity for technical implementation, but this is a chance to hit him hard with all the things, with their wish list that they've wanted and have been rejected in the past. And he doesn't know the history of all these things that have been rejected and the compromises that have been made and the blood, sweat, and tears that went into reaching these compromises. He doesn't know that, and he's not going to have anyone there to tell him. So,
Right. And in the meantime, they've got 3 hours of time just to present their so-called proposal. And it's also a bit problematic, because, you know, I appreciate that Fadi is trying to be constructive and engage and do all those good things, but it's sort of making it into a process where different interest groups have to convince him what should happen.
That's
right. Not really the CEO's role.
That's right. I mean, it isn't the policy development process that, you know, there's a meeting in Brussels to lobby the staff to change the policy that came out of the community. That's not the policy development process. So why he's setting up a meeting to do that is really
the policy development process.
Pardon me?
He doesn't care about the policy development process. He's come in to take over a new company, and he's doing what he thinks he needs to do to solve problems. And our petty, you know, policy development process is not something that is his concern. He has not shown any interest in that policy. He's there to take over his company. So I think it's all well and good that we're saying we're going to lose credibility with him, but I don't see him having any credibility himself.
I know this has been really disappointing, you know, because he came into our meeting on Friday in Toronto and said, you know, he's going to believe in multi-equal stakeholders, the equality of stakeholders. And then what's the first thing he does? He calls a meeting of 7 members of the CSG, and only an afterthought, 1 member of the NCSG maybe can get invited. I mean, obviously that's not equality among stakeholders, obviously. So I share these concerns that you know, there have been commitments made and a lot of rhetorical promises, and now it's time to live up to those words, and the actions are not meeting.
Kathy has her hand raised.
Please, yes.
Hi, everybody. Sorry for joining late. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Hi. Who's on the call? Just wondering.
We've got Robin and Avery and Maria and you. And is there anyone else on the call? Because I don't actually know. I'm not on in the Adobe Connect.
Yeah, I don't see anyone else in the Adobe Connect, and I don't know how many people have dialed in, if anyone, that I don't see, because there's that also that table you could bring up of others, but of course they could just say something.
Okay, just wondering, I see Glenn, and who's Julia Charvelin?
They're all staff.
Oh, okay, well, hi, Julia. Okay, so let me play devil's advocate and say that maybe Fadi isn't so bad. Well, let me do this. If the two were on the other foot and it was, say, who is, and we believed passionately that privacy issues were at stake, and no matter what ICANN did, if they violated that, we were gonna keep pushing the issue. For 12 years, we would keep pushing the issue because it was a principle that was at stake. Let's flip it over. I think the intellectual property guys, let's give them some credit for sincerity. They really do believe the new GTLDs are going to be the end of their lives. Plus, they get paid to do this. They get paid to lobby on behalf of their clients. There's no such thing as being too overzealous unless you cross an ethical line, and they haven't crossed it yet, guys. So they really believe that, and I've talked to them. You know, we've all talked to them. And while we don't agree, they do believe. Although the IPC guys, our guys, are really, really good. I've heard them present to their own people. I was at the International Trademark Association's meeting in D.C., their cyber session. And who is it, Brian Winterfeld, who I don't know personally, Brian and Jay Scott and others got up in front of like 1,000 people and said, chill, guys, you know, you're not going to be able to protect in the same way you did in .com. You really need to rethink your strategy. I mean, they almost gave the speech we would have given in front of that community, but they gave it to their own guys. So I give them, plus we have Paul McGrady, who's gone out to really create and work with a new URS provider who says he can do it under, you know, at the price point, under the rules. And we've heard John Nevitt, who I know is not IPC, but John Nevitt, Mark Partridge, and Paul McGrady defend the STI, all 3 members of the STI, and say, look, we should be done. But there are people even outside the community, and I tried to tell you guys in Toronto that there's been a nonstop group on the Hill and at the Department of Commerce, very, very powerful companies, that keep knocking on the door of the Department of Commerce. To its credit, has been fairly neutral on this. I think that has a lot to do with the ITU session coming up, but it has been fairly neutral. But some of the biggest companies in the world showed up at the ICANN meeting, not necessarily members of the IPC and BC, and kept pounding on this principle. So let's just give some background. FADI's under a lot of, you know, they're some of the biggest companies in the world saying the world's coming to an end. So he feels the need to listen, I think. So I thought what he wrote to Bill Drake was really interesting. And would that be okay to read it, Robin?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think it is, because he said in his PS, you know, feel free to share this with my colleagues if you think it'll be helpful. So, yeah.
Right. So I wanted to talk to you guys about it because initially I was really concerned. The idea of going to Brussels, the idea of this repeat of the IRT was just as startling and difficult and upsetting to me as it is to all of us. You know, the idea of one representative of the registrars, registries, and maybe a representative of NCUC, but completely outnumbered. You know, this is, we've been here before. Just because we're paranoid doesn't mean we haven't lived through this multiple times in the last 15 years. We know exactly what happens when one-sided groups get together. So anyway, Fadi wrote, and I thought it's good, and I think maybe we should take it on face value. He said, the new requests from the IPCBC constituencies have been made public, and I wanted to better understand them. So I used the opportunity when we were all together to hear them out, and I also personally contacted Robin on Skype to invite someone from your constituency on this item on the agenda so your community can participate initially and, more importantly, prepare for the public discussion on the matter. Now, we don't think there needs to be a public discussion, neither do the registrars, but it looks like Fadi does. Given that the IPCBC proposal discussion will only occupy one-fifth of our two days, 3 hours.
But he's wrong, and I'll tell you why after you're done reading it.
I suggested that your representative can join via video link from the ICANN office, which I assume there's one from D.C., or Skype. Accommodation of time zones is always difficult, and the arrival of certain parties is dictating the agenda timing. But we'll do our best to accommodate time zones. I also offered Robin that if you all wish to meet with me first to share your views without the other stakeholders present, I would be happy to take the time. I think we should have done that on Friday, but I'm not sure that was such a clear invitation.
Yeah, that was the first I'd heard of that, believe you me.
Okay.
I'm glad he believes he invited us to meet, so let's take him up on that.
Okay. I think we should. Also, that was point number 7 that he sent to Bill. Point number 4, I think, is really, really interesting. Because here, I think, is the essence of the misunderstanding. He says, given the informality of the session, meaning the Brussels session, I asked representatives of the constituencies directly impacted with the implementation and contractual implications of the clearinghouse to help me develop a proposal. And this is where he doesn't understand we are directly involved and affected by the implementation because we are representing the registrants.
Yeah, I mean,
his
explanation does show some really big holes in understanding the process if he thinks non-commercial users are not impacted by these measures as much as the IPC.
So here's the question. It does seem to be a genuine invitation. He does seem to be under genuine pressure. And he does seem to want to be genuinely open. I don't know if you agree with me, but let me posit those three things. I can't go to Brussels. Even when I priced it last week, we were talking about a ticket that was more almost $3,000 economy. Obviously, no one's paying for this. But do you want me to go to the – and plus being there without ALAC, without other people, outnumbered, did not seem to be a good idea. But do you want me to be at the ICANN office – I'm in D.C. I can go down to the ICANN office. I don't care if it's 2 o'clock in the morning, if they let me in, and follow not just this session but as much of these 2 days as possible.
Well, see, the thing is, you know, he pointed out and he said in that agenda, these 8 points issues are only going to be on the agenda for the small part of the time, and the other times we're going to be talking about trademark clearinghouse implementation details. But the IPCBC's ideas are exactly fit within that. So the IPCBC's ideas are in play 100% of the time because those provisions are in this 8-point plan. They're in the proposals we're going to see coming forward this week. So, you know, I think he's not understanding when he says, oh, we're only talking about these things one-fifth of the time. No, all of the 100% of the time, the IPCBC's ideas are going to be in play, and we aren't going to be there. So your question about, you know, do we want – I'm sorry, is somebody trying to say something? Okay, I thought I heard somebody trying to break in. So your question, do we want someone to be there, I'm concerned that if we do have someone who, you know, is not there in person but is participating via video link, you know, in the middle of the night, they're half asleep. I mean, that's going to be really tough for you. You know, how effective of a participation can it really be? And I think probably not much. And I worry that, you know, if we are there on paper, even if we're not there in a meaningful way, that we just give them an argument to say, well, representatives of all members of the community were there and had their say, and there was a representative from the non-commercial users, and so we heard that what that side had to say, and this is what we agreed in the end. So, I mean, it'll be just like the IRT where, you know, even though we didn't, in fact, know what was happening in there and would never have agreed to what was happening in there, because there was, in theory, a member of NCUC who was in that group, they were able to claim that our concerns were heard and were addressed and were and so I, you know, I wonder, do we want to give them that? We might just be better off boycotting this meeting altogether. I mean, this meeting is set up in a completely one-sided way that is sure to produce a result of reopening decisions against us in favor of the IPCPC, and I don't know, maybe we should just boycott it, because I don't know that anything good can come from it. Okay, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Can I add something?
Please.
First of all, I think boycotting it is nuts. I think if we can get voices in there, even to say we disagree with this completely, and to repeat constantly a mantra of we are not properly included in here, boycotting it is always a bad idea, because if you boycott, you're absent, and being absent is something you can never remediate for. I think that it is also true that the IPC cruft will mostly be confined to the 3 hours, because there's a lot of the technical implementation issues that are being argued over, in that the NTAG and registries do not accept the implementation model that ICANN has put forward, and that has been a critical issue, and one where staff has said, by and large, we don't really care what the registries and NTAG have to say about the implementation model. We're going to do it the way we're going to do it, because we are ICANN. And so I think that that issue is hot enough on its own that this intrusion of IPC and BC into that meeting points will really be restricted to the 3 hours, because their 3 points don't really affect the operational aspects of how claims and trademark go on. As claims runs the same way, whether it's for 30 days, 60 days, or forever. The trademark clearinghouse runs the same way, even if, you know, it's more in favor of the trademarks in terms of whether it's a centralized model, a push model, a pull model, etc., all stuff they're arguing on the two models of implementation, I think is orthogonal to these 8 points. So unless they're allowed to take over the whole meeting, which I don't see the rest of the people that are going there allowing them to do. But I think if several of us have to participate on the phone overnight, you know, it's jet lag without travel. But it's no different than traveling there. You just shift your schedule around. But
what
we do is we submit ourselves.
And Avery, what would you think if we submit ourselves as observer status, observers with comments, but not official participants? Because we're not there, we're not in the hallways, we're not at the dinners, we're not at the lunches.
I don't know if what we call ourselves matters. Remote participants is usually more of an observer than a participant, and we all know that. Mm-hmm. But sure. I don't know that it matters what we call ourselves.
I think it might. I think in this particular case it might, but I'm with you that we should do it.
Yeah, it's Maria here. I'd really support doing that, because I think, you know, even though we've been backed into a corner, I think we have to act constructively and be seen to be acting constructively you know, in order to carry the day, I mean, as, you know, as the arguments go on. I also wonder, I mean, can we take up Fadi on this idea of, well, you know, let's meet him or him come to us or, you know, to our constituency people who are actually involved. I mean, he sounds like he is open to us saying, right, you said you would meet us after the, you know, and we say, well, we want to meet you after the meeting, and then we get our say, having talked to the Jeffs, having had, you know, Cathy's input and observation. I mean, then we can kind of get to make our points after everybody else, which could work really well for us.
Right. Okay, so it sounds like folks think we need to participate remotely and continue to push for our meeting, our separate meeting, after the Brussels meeting so we can have the last word. But, you know, I also think it's important that we get transcripts and recordings made of the Brussels discussions.
Mm.
I'm concerned about how closed and how secret they are. I mean, there's no announcement on the ICANN website. It's a little troubling that, you know, there's a meeting to reopen years of consensus policy, and there's no announcement of it on the website that it's even going to happen.
Yeah, I wonder if, I mean, Cathy, I really appreciate your offer to get up in the middle of the night and observe this, and, you know, I can try and remotely participate as well. I'm in a better time zone for that. But is it worthwhile thinking of having some kind of chapeau statement at some point, you know, from you that says, hey, we're not, you know, as politely as possible, but we're not really thrilled about the way this came together, and we're doing our best to follow it and, you know, want to stick to the policy process, et cetera.
Well, first, I'm not sure Fadi thinks it's reopening policy. Let's play devil's advocate on that again, too. Just because BC has an IPC have activated three working groups that work through all the storm preparation time on the East Coast, which was really stupid. They should have been clearing their drains like the rest of us. You know, and their houses are probably flooding right now. But and not that I wish that, but, you know, they've been very, very busy over the weekend. And just because they're doing that doesn't necessarily mean Fadi knows or cares what they're doing. It, you know, they might have overreacted, just as in some ways maybe we have too. So, you know, they may be pushing all this stuff. This may be, you know, the golden platter, but, you know, presenting their stuff on a golden platter right in front of Fadi, but maybe not. If he really does believe it's an implementation meeting, maybe he'll roll his eyes when all this stuff comes over.
Hmm.
Especially if we can convince him ahead of time that we are very much involved in the implementation of this, because we're really here on the registrant side with ALAC too. That's the position we took in the STI, was what's it going to look like when these messages come across, when this process comes across. Now, two good messages we can take, and I wanted to check with you about this because I actually picked up the phone and called somebody on the IPC side who will remain nameless, if that's okay, and said I wanted to run some understandings of the Trademark Clearinghouse by you and its implementation. So let me ask you, would anybody on this call, and Robin, you can tell me what the proper process is, but the STI actually envisioned tying the Trademark Clearinghouse to the URS. As long as you've got something registered, obviously the category of goods and services still matters. It always matters, as does the geographic location. But if the URS is fast and cheap and we've already got this Trademark Clearinghouse, it was something in the back of the STI's mind. It seems to not be clear to the IPC, but actually I never thought, you know, the STI team, I don't think we ever, you know, the NCUC STI team, I don't think we ever had a problem with tying in the Trademark Clearinghouse to the URS. If anything, it narrows it down to registered marks and not all this crazy common law stuff. So that's something deeply worrying the IPC, and it may not necessarily need to be a worry of theirs.
Can I ask a question? Ms. Avery, by tying it to the URS, do you mean that you can't use URS unless you're registered in the Trademark Clearinghouse?
There seem to be two different options that are being talked about. Again, the IPC right now doesn't think it's tied in at all, and I thought there was nothing we did that excluded that tie-in. But one of the things I've heard talk about is that you might check a box if you're already in the Trademark Clearinghouse, that it goes, one is to exclude anything not in the Trademark Clearinghouse, but that might be hard since we didn't draft the URS that way. The other is just to check a box if you're in the Trademark Clearinghouse and allow the examiner or shoot that registration over to the examiner from the Trademark Clearinghouse or allow the examiner to go into the Trademark Clearinghouse to get it, the URS examiner. So it's not quite clear. another implementation detail not fully hammered out.
I'm not sure this is going to be a big issue for us, just tying, you know, tying the one to the other. A couple of these 8-point proposals, you know, frankly, I don't think we care one way or the other, but there are at least two of them that are a big deal. And so, you know, I think we can give on the ones like tying it together where maybe it doesn't matter to us. It wasn't excluded by the STI, and we can't, you know, we don't know of any reason why it's a bad idea, so fine. But, you know, so I think we want to focus on the specific points that we have disagreement with them on.
Good. Would it be worth running down? Because anything we can give them or anything we don't think is already excluded by the rules, by the way, the second one's really cool, you know, they can go home and tell their guys, you know, they got something. It's always easy to give them something they actually already got and didn't know they got. That's a great one.
I definitely am in favor of it being tied to the trademark clearinghouse, where if you're not in a trademark clearinghouse, you don't get to use URS.
I don't think we can go that far. That's not in the URS. But we can make it faster, cheaper, and quicker if you are in the trademark clearing.
Right, but what I'm saying is once you open up the issue of is trademark clearinghouse attached, I think that should be something we propose. In other words, every time an issue gets opened, you can go plus or minus on it. Every issue can be used to strengthen our point of view or to strengthen theirs. So if they want to open the issue of trademark clearinghouse, then we say, sure, as long as it's mandatory that you be in the trademark clearinghouse to use URS. Let's not give them the issue easily.
Yeah, I have to agree with that.
Okay. Would it be worth going
anytime through
Anytime
you give IPC easily anything, they use it to climb the next mountain. Never give them anything easily.
I'll just put in, I'll just disagree. No, sometimes you just want to put the nail in the coffin and end the discussion. But
you can't end the discussion with them. You're right. If that was possible, if they were, you know, reasonable negotiators who negotiated to a consensus and then lived with it, I would agree with you. Every nail you put in a coffin is in our coffin. It's never in the coffin of the discussion. It's never in theirs. It only gives them advantages.
A philosophical debate from which I will take a really big, giant step back. Is there any way we can go through the 8 points and see if we have what reservations we have, if any, about them?
Yeah, no, actually, that's exactly what I think we should do, because we need to craft a response to this, and, you know, it should come out in the next day or so. So that's really what I was hoping we could use much of this call for, is to go through these 8 points and not spend a lot of time on the ones we don't care about, but, you know, at least the ones that we do care about, really figure out what we want to say and how do we want to approach them. That would be my suggestion. Anybody else?
And that's the best preparation for the upcoming meeting for whoever is going in on observer status. So,
okay.
That's why I put it in the window on the...
Great, yeah.
On the Adobe.
Great. Well, should we start with at least numbers 4 and 8? Because I think those are our biggies. And
can we start with actually number... Can we just eliminate the easy ones then? Can we start with number 1?
Well, we thought they were easy, but are they?
I don't know.
All right, that's fine. Let's go in order. I'm just being silly. Never mind. Okay, number 1, extend Sunrise launch period from 30 to 60 days with a standardized process. Okay, what are folks thinking about that one?
Why would we agree to that?
Why wouldn't we?
I mean, because it just slows down the new introduction. If, you know, 30 days should be enough, especially once people know they've registered in the trademark clearinghouse before any of these have started to be deployed. You know, what does doubling achieve for them? 30 days should really be enough. It's been enough in the past with most every sunrise we've seen. Why do it?
Is that true? It was.
They're going to trade something else for that? Sure. But just to give it to them, why? I don't see it as necessary.
Was EU's, Maria, do you know if EU's sunrise was only 30 days? In the scheme of things, that does seem to be a pretty short period of time. Again, just playing devil's advocate, guys. If you're trying to follow 1,000 new DTLDs, 30 days is not much.
But, I mean, this is a change from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is a change from what's in the applicant guidebook now. So we've got all sorts of applicants who have put in their, you know, made their case, made their business case based upon the 30-day period. And you know, for ICANN to come back now and say, oh, well, actually, we want to change this to 60 days. I mean, it's hard for a business to be able to respond to rules constantly changing all the time. It seems to me that you know, just on principle, ICANN should really have to stick with what's in the applicant guidebook and, you know, just giving it to them because it's not a huge issue for us. Well, it is a huge issue for us if it is contrary to the policy in the applicant guidebook right now.
Well, and this is the easiest one of them all, which is why I wanted to start with one. I mean, I thought this would be the easiest one because maybe not 60 days, but 40 days. And it seems to me our biggest reservation is not a principled one, but maybe it is, you know, the overall principle of the consensus policy. But the question I would have is, what are the implications for the new GTLD businesses? And if they're concerned, then I'm concerned. If they're not concerned, then I'm not concerned. Because, you know, 30 days, 40 days, I'm not crazy about 60 days, but maybe, you know, they put that there as a negotiating tool. But if it's 40 days or 50 days, I'm not sure the world comes to an end. The world might come to an end with number two. And that's why I wanted to see if we could draw a bright line. But if we can't even give number one, then we're probably not going to agree on very much in the next 8 points. I mean, we probably won't agree that we can give them anything if our starting principle is no compromise.
Well, I would say not that it's no compromise, but that it's, you know, the burden is on them to change what's in the draft applicant guidebook. And, you know, if there's anything on any one of their proposals that is, in fact, recommending a change to what's in the guidebook, I think that they should have to have a burden of showing us why that's necessary, and there should be a presumption against changing something in the applicant guidebook unless, you know, there's really some kind of serious problem that hasn't been thought about. And addressed by the community.
We also, Americans here, we really have to be very careful. We've been trained for the last 4 years at least that compromise to Republicans and the IPCs means upfront capitulation. That's the way we compromise. We compromise by saying, oh, sure, anything you want that even seems like it might perhaps be reasonable, we'll give you upfront, as opposed to starting with a position that says, no, none of this is acceptable because all of it is blatantly contradictory to consensus policy that's already been breached twice. Now, if in the course of arguments, things do get agreed on a compromise basis, that's reasonable. But I would say absolutely nothing should be upfront capitulated on. I mean, you know, that I've been trained over the last 4 years that to a Republican, and I see very little difference between IPC performance characteristics and Republican performance characteristics, is the only compromise is agreeing with us 100%.
I think that's a great way to make sure we have no credibility with FADI going forward. None.
I don't care about credibility with FADI. I'm looking for FADI's credibility with us.
Oh, I see. Okay.
He's the hired hand. We are the volunteers that control or are supposed to control ICANN. Let's remember what ICANN is about. It is a stakeholder-run organization which he is supposed to serve. It's his credibility that needs to be proven, not ours.
I understand, but we're not going to be in that room. And very persuasive cases are going to be made. So my recommendation as an advocate for this group, and having written so much of this stuff, guys, is that we pick what's not objectionable and then draw our heels at everything. If you draw your heels at everything, you're going to have a tough time. So let me just say, you know, again, for number one, if it's 40 days and that gives them some peace of mind and the new GTLDs can live with it, it's not the end of the world.
When it comes to number one, though, I would go in there and really make them make their case. If this is, in fact, a change from what's in the applicant guidebook, they should have to explain why they need that. And I mean, we just haven't heard that. And I think that maybe this is one that we can give in. We come in there with a principled perspective of you don't change any of the existing policies at all, but then after 2 days of discussions, can we give 10 days on one in order to win on everything else? Sure, of course. But I think we can go at it from both the perspective of you don't change anything unless, you know, Buddy has been convinced or the group has been convinced that changes must be made, and then and only then do we say, okay, well, maybe we can give you 10 days here.
But it's not, okay, you know, technically it's 3 days, it's 3 hours on this, and covering each point, you know, 8 points can be 3 hours. So I'm not sure how often you get to go back to the same.
I suspect their ideas are going to be in play 100% of the time because it is those ideas that they're going to bring back into the technical implementation proposals. So I don't think it's just this 1 3-hour conversation where we're going to be discussing their proposals. I think their proposals are going to be in play 100% of the time because they will bring them in when they're discussing Trademark Clearinghouse implementation details.
And we need someone on that phone the whole time.
Yeah.
And even then, guys, it's very, very difficult to make demands when you're the remote participant and you're the observer.
I know, which is, you know.
And even if we were there, it's very difficult to make demands. One person out of nine. I know we're all frustrated. This is a difficult position to be in. Anyway, should we talk about number two?
Okay. Extending the Trademark Clearinghouse and claims notice for an indefinite period, ensure the process is easy to use, secure, and stable. And I know Newman said this one's going to be tough for the registrars to swallow. Hmm. Kathy, I know you had some thoughts on number two.
I'm sorry,
tough
me
for the
or
registrars
others?
Too. I mean, you know, the Trademark Clearinghouse requires sending notices, so forever. You're going to have to be using the Trademark Clearinghouse. It just, for any of the new registries, it'll be an unbearable burden.
I think we have a different argument.
It's a substantive change in that, you know, changing something for a limited period to an indefinite period is actually a pretty substantive change. And so, again, I think this is changing the negotiated consensus policy in a substantive way to go from a limited finite duration to forever and ever, amen. That's a huge change of an obligation.
But from our perspective, what's the principle at stake? And let me suggest that it might be ongoing intimidation of registrants. I'm not sure I'd phrase it that way in an open. But we know that this period where registrants sit down and get this potentially long chain of information of do you know that the string you're trying to register matches McDonald's and Nestle's and Hershey's. This is a really tough thing, even though we wrote the trademark claims notice to be as neutral as possible, meaning, and it came up to me again in Toronto, would we just say, I'm not infringing, click yes? And I said, no way on God's green earth are you allowed to put that in. Because infringement is a legal term, and God knows most registrants and most attorneys can't say an up or down on that in 10 seconds, and registrants certainly can't. They're not allowed. I'm not going to let them make legal judgments. We can't let them make legal judgments. So this process is actually very hard for a registrant, I think, to sit there and look at all this stuff coming in and still click through and say, well, I'm using time in a generic sense, or I'm using time in a way that's completely different than Time Warner's magazine. Imagine somebody in Africa sitting and clicking through all this. So a lot of registrants are going to be turned back. And we agreed as a matter of principle that we could allow that for a short period of time, but if we extend it indefinitely, that's intimidation. that's ongoing intimidation, and basically it's an ongoing defensive registration that they haven't, that we disagreed to. We didn't allow this kind of ongoing block, right? Remember how many months we fought against this idea of an automatic block for words like time and life and people and discover. And Kia has a new car called Soul. We didn't agree for those defensive blocks across all new GTLDs. If we extend the clearing, this idea of these notices forever, in effect, it may operate to something similar.
Yeah.
Sorry, you can't tell I'm passionate on this one, can you?
Mm-hmm.
This one I don't like.
Yeah.
So, but I wanted to see if you agree.
Yeah, no, I am. I was just writing this down as well, that the intimidation of registrants and acts as a defensive block against all TLDs, which was not something that, it was something they had to give up previously, and so it's a way of bringing it back in.
And I'd recommend more diplomatic language, but that's what it is.
Okay. I'm just trying to understand the concept.
Does the concept make sense? Does anybody disagree with me?
No, it has a chilling effect.
Yeah, makes sense to me, too.
So that's why I'm willing, you know, the first period, I'm not sure 30 days was magical when we got it originally. I think that can be tweaked for number one. That's why I'm a little, but number two, no, whatever we pick, that's it. It's done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so cool.
All right, so that's number two.
Thanks.
And I think the registrars, again, are going to have a big issue with number two, so we can find some agreement with Jeff there.
And plus, the intellectual property guys will have had their chance. Whether it's 30 days or 40 days, they'll have their chance. So, you know, we're going beyond their chance to intimidate everybody.
Okay, so for number three, are we done with two? Our understanding
yep.
of two? Okay, number three, complete the URS as a low-cost alternative and improve its usefulness. If necessary, ICANN could underwrite for an initial period.
I think it's moot.
Except for the improve its usefulness. What does that mean?
Good point.
I know usefulness.
Sure, completing it is good. Keeping it at the price that the PDP, low price that was agreed upon by SDI and whatever, that's good. Getting underwrite to ICANN to underwrite it with the vast millions it's collected from, you know, applicants, that's fine. And that's all implementation. But improve its usefulness?
Right. To them, not to anyone else, right? Usefulness to whom?
That's why I love these calls, because that's something I hadn't picked up on. That's a really good point, Avery. The other thing is I think it's moot. I mean, Paul McGrady said that, you know, they're going to be at the URF session on Thursday at ICANN, said there's going to be a proposal going in, but it's not from WIPO, not from NAS, it's from a new guy, that says he can meet the price point and follow the rules. So subsidy might not even be necessary. But does anyone object to a short-term subsidy from ICANN in this area while it's getting kicked off?
Well, let me play devil's advocate for one second, even though I don't really know that I have an opinion on this. But
okay,
what about, you know, again, this is just registrants paying for private benefits that the companies who are benefiting from these rights should be the ones who are paying for them, that this shouldn't be something that the public has to bear. It should be something that the trademark holders have to bear.
Is the response, and also playing devil's advocate, is the response that this one is pretty clear that the representation was made that it would be at a certain, that the URS would be at a certain price point, and that that price point, since it came from the IRT, was not contradicted by anything that the STI did or consensus policy. It followed. So that if it's significantly above that price point, maybe we're not keeping with consensus policy at that point.
Perhaps, but I'm not convinced that it can't be done at the price point, you know.
We're convinced that it can. I mean, that's the biggest argument, is that this point is moot.
Yes. Okay.
Courtesy of the IPC itself and Paul McGrady.
Also, I think the only people really who are going to object to ICANN underwriting it would be the ICANN staff in one way or another. So, you know, they're going to make that point or kick it back or just ignore it. So I don't know that it's necessarily a point that we need to make.
Yeah, I don't think it's one of our high priorities. You know, I mean, there are points on this list that really get our blood boiling, and I'm not sure this is one of them.
Yeah, but can we agree? We probably don't want long-term subsidy, but short-term we think the point is moot, but short-term subsidy for a very short time.
I have such a hard time.
I want to do that. Okay, never mind. Okay. You don't like subsidizing Hershey and Nestle? I don't understand. That seems so unreasonable.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Hershey and Nestle, they don't have a lot of extra money, Rob. Tight budgets these days.
No, we have to pay for it because they can't. Oh, right.
Out of registrants' pockets.
Right.
Much more concerning, of course, is a loser pays model, which...
It's coming at us next week. That's going to be one of their proposals next week. Loser pays in every case.
Okay, forget it. That's why I'd much rather go with something like this, and I think it diffuses the loser pays.
By saying it's moot?
By saying it's moot, or by saying that we don't object, and or, in the alternative, we don't object to a short-term subsidy. But we don't want automatic default, and we don't want loser pays.
Yeah, I mean, that might be how they tie the loser pays into this particular number. That's how they will bring it forward.
But in this case, we just reinforce that we've already heard from Paul McGrady, an IPC member, that someone's coming in at price point under the rules. So be it.
Yeah, so we don't even need to attack whether or not it's okay. The principle's okay or not. We can just say, look, this one's done. Somebody's already said they can do it. Let's move on to the next issue.
Yeah, in fact, it might be slightly risky to concede at this point that the principle is okay. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a little worried about that. where that could lead. So I like the moot argument better.
Yeah, but I think we can probably agree that we're not going to concede the principle. I mean, this particular proposal doesn't cost us any lost sleep.
Yeah. Depending on what they mean by it, if they come back next week or this week with the loser pays as being this part of this principle, then it is a big issue for us. And we do expect they will come back this week with the loser pays model.
Which is, again, why we might think about diffusing it. But
right, by saying it's all
moot. No, we've given you two. One is that it's moot and we think people will provide it. And the other is... If I can't subsidize this for a little, and by the way, there was agreement at the Prague session at the URS, and I was only there for a short time because I was taping the Google video, but there seemed to be agreement that if I can't throw in $100,000 for the year, and that was the figure that was thrown out, on what basis, I don't know, the world didn't come to an end.
But if that's the amount of money they're talking about, I mean, that's peanuts as far as ICANN is concerned.
Yeah.
So just something to keep in mind. So is that what Maria said? Is that a position that, if push comes to shove, we're not?
I think it's a place where we could be prepared to give something on. But at the same time, I'm uneasy with the concept of the public should be paying for these private benefits. But again, if we're talking $100,000 and... it makes this one go away, and so we can focus on the ones we really care about.
So that's a good question. Is before we, that's a good question to raise. Is how much is really being talked about? If this isn't moot, how much? And let them come back with some numbers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great. That's a great position, and that's a valid one to put out there. And again, it really, really diffuses the loser pays an automatic default, guys. It's much.
Yeah. And apparently they're losing on the automatic default. The IPC is losing on that against the BC. So we probably won't see the automatic default come rear its ugly head.
BC knows that their guys will get yanked too. They'll get their equipment.
Okay, so should we go on to number four, which is one of the ones that's most important for the IP owners. So they're going to spend a lot of energy on this one. Implement a mechanism for trademark owners to prevent second-level registration of their marks, exact matches, plus character strings previously determined to have been found abusively registered or used across all registries upon payment of a reasonable fee with appropriate safeguards for registrants of legitimate right or interest. So, Kathy, what do you think?
I can agree with that one as long as the reasonable fee is $1 billion.
I can't agree with that one at all. It's not law. This is combining programming at its best. A string of characters suddenly now rises above any level of goods and services or even commercial services at all.
Yeah.
And becomes entombed forever as a golden string. Good God. No.
I mean, this is the list that they lost on, the global marks list, right? Isn't this just bringing it back in a different way?
I think this is beyond that because it's the not only exact matches, but just about anything you can think of.
Mm-hmm.
And don't forget, they're talking about the strings found to be abusive. So by their own estimates, the UDRP has, 75-80% default? So all sorts of generics have been lumped in with those defaults. And when they're defended, they normally are protected, but they generally get lost. You know, they're generally lost if they're not defended in a UDRP action. So suddenly all those, all the time, life, I mean, everybody, basically, all the IPC guys have a number of cases where they've won in the UDRP and they want all those strings to go in. Now, but the good news for them is I don't think they understand that the URS pulls from this stuff. So they somehow, some of them seem to think that the URS is an exact match thing, and it's not. So if you have Yahoo in URS, and Yahoo really wants Yahoo Financial, they want Yahoo Sports, they want Yahoo singles, they want Yahoo, all that in the trademark clearinghouse, and they can't have it because they don't have trademarks on those. It's not an exact match. But they have had to defend a lot of these in the UDRP. But the URS should give that to them. The URS examiner should be able to look at the trademark that's in the clearinghouse for Yahoo. It's a federally registered mark. They should be able to look at Yahoo Financial, if that's what the registered mark is, and see whether, you know, and see what the top-level domain is and make that call. So technically, these types of abuses are exactly what the URS was created for. And I don't understand why they're pushing it back into the trademark clearinghouse.
Mm.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah, but I'm trying to understand what they're getting at. I know this one is one of their big issues that they care a great deal about. It's just far too broad when they say previously determined to have been abusively registered or used. I mean, just because one guy abusively used a trademark doesn't mean every other use of it in the future is going to be abusive. I mean, that's a complete conflation of logic.
But look at it, guys. Also, plus exact matches plus character strings previously determined to have been abusively registered or used. This is Jay Scott. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. He spends a lot of time policing. And this is also kind of Facebook, I would bet. But this has been Jay Scott's thing for a long time, is Yahoo Financial. When you go into Yahoo, there's a whole bunch of categories down the left side, which are not trade. I don't believe they're trademark. Yahoo Financial, Yahoo Singles, Yahoo Cars. I don't know. I could call it up if you want to. I looked at it last week. And so all he's had UDRP actions on most of these. They're not exact trademarks, and this is what he wants to be able to put into the trademark clearinghouse. Again, it's like a Yahoo Financials. And I think what he gets is, I don't think he gets it in the trademark clearinghouse. I don't think he gets to block it up front because it's not a trademark, but I think he wins in the URS, probably. Unless there's a good reason for registering it, he'll probably win the URS because it probably is, and I hate the word, cyber squatter.
So is it because he can prevent the website from ever going up in the first place?
Right. That's what he's looking for.
Yeah.
And what they've added beyond the GPML
is that it's narrower and broader than the GPML. What they've added beyond the GPML, why it's narrower is it's, if it's only been found to have been used abusively, so if there's a UDRP action against it. But why it's broader than the UDRP, why it's broader than consensus policy is because it includes many, many strings that you'd never be able to register in the trademark clearinghouse under current rules. So I think I agree with you. I think the answer is no here, but that happily for them, most of these situations should be covered very quickly under the URS. They know that. They just don't like it.
They want to stop the website from going up in the first place rather than having to get it taken down.
And you can understand, if you're on their side, this actually makes some sense because they don't want it, they keep fighting again and again and again for the same strings.
Right, but then they're over-inclusive and over-broad in what's going to be prevented, because if somebody for a non-commercial purpose wanted to criticize Yahoo Financials because, you know, somebody there was a jerk or whatever, so they want to criticize them, and they would have a right to do that, but they wouldn't be able to because the string would be in this on this list that couldn't be registered.
Right. So this is the GPML coming back. So under a .sucks or .whistleblower or .concerns,
these
strings would all be legitimate. Mm.
Criticism sites and all.
Yeah.
It's just far too broad in what it prevents. And they can get their legitimate concerns taken care of in the URS anyways, so there's really no reason to do this. Only harm can come.
And if you tie in the trademark clearinghouse to the URS, you can get it that much faster. If their concern is legit, they get it taken down that much faster. Does anybody see it differently? Okay, because the character strings they're trying to mix with these trademarks, I'm pretty sure are generics. They haven't given us any examples, but we've heard them before. I think these are generic terms combined with trademark terms.
Mm-hmm.
So Facebook personals or Facebook pages. This is, and by the way, the concerns on these are very legitimate. I mean, they're very sincere. Whether they're legitimate or not, I don't know. They're very sincere.
They may be. The problem is they're overreaching and they're overbroad in their approach to addressing what may be a legitimate concern. Okay, so are we pretty much good with number four? This is a big one for us.
And by principle, this goes way, way, way beyond any rights given to you by a trademark.
Right.
Trademarks are tied to a category of goods and services. This goes into every string, every type of speech, every type of expression.
Yeah.
No way.
No geographic.
Violates basic principle.
All the limitations that come on a trademark owner's rights are not actually are not finding their way into these policies. The geographic limitation, the classes and services limitation, the limitation on non-commercial speech, all of these things are perfectly lawful under trademark law, but these policies are not accounting for permitting these kinds of uses.
Yeah,
right.
And as someone who's kind of fresh to this particular point, I mean, it is so obviously just covered with the trademark protections that have already been agreed elsewhere. So it sounds like a really hard sell for them, you know, for the IPC to make, really, given that there are so many potential negative consequences. I mean, I think the strongest argument is this: we already do this.
Yeah, I think that's right. And then the problem is you know, Fadi's got the Google and Facebook and Yahoo and the U.S. Department of Commerce banging down their door, and they say, you must do this to protect the public good, and, you know, that's got to be a
right. But I think then we can say, you know, I mean, obviously I'm not the lawyer here, but, you know, our argument is particularly this thing with the character strings. Well, when if the character string has got Google or Yahoo or Facebook in it, then clearly that's a trademark, you know, infringement, and that's really easy to pursue on its own basis, the notion of other non-trademark infringing character strings being included is clearly problematic. And yeah, so sorry, maybe I'm being naive about it, but you know, it seems so obvious on the face of this that this is an overreach.
Yeah. I know, but the problem is that doesn't seem to faze them at all.
No, but I mean, I think we can quite reasonably make an argument that sounds very compelling to a reasonable person. Oh, yeah, this is, of course, that we looked after that already. You know, we've got
right.
That.
The problem that they'll see with that one, and I don't wish to play devil's advocate, is that they'll just complain that, yeah, but that costs us money, whereas we want something that prevents it up front for free. The other thing I think a lot of the registries will possibly respond is, hey, offering these kinds of mechanisms is a way that voluntarily we can differentiate ourselves. And I think people need to remind people that the original consensus definition on RPMs was that they would be voluntary. And now to even say that going beyond the usurpation of STI, we now want to do even more, you know, further goes against that, enabling the registries to basically differentiate themselves by the RPMs that they voluntarily offer.
Hmm.
And that's something we argued for a lot in developing the consensus policy, is that all RPMs should be voluntary. We've lost that now. But this is going so far as to make all possible RPMs must be mandatory. And that so deviates again. I know I tend to think of keeping to the consensus of the PDP as sort of a sacred bedrock, but if we lose that one, which step by step we're losing it, ICANN ceases to be a community-run organization.
Yeah, agreed. The notion of sorry, a reasonable fee, would that be set by the registries or by this mechanism, or would it be across jurisdictions? It just seems kind of hard to legislate for.
Exactly. I mean, I think not something similar sort of maybe like this at, like, what, $200 or something across their registries. You know, but again, that becomes a big differentiator for them, both in the application process and whatever. So,
and we already know, I think, that
million,
the registry...
A million,
right?
I come down. A million might be reasonable.
No amount of money. No, sorry.
No amount of money.
I've got to disagree with you. Infinite amounts of money. If you're going to violate every category of goods and services, every limit of trademark law, I think the billion was right.
Yeah, you're probably right. Thank you for stopping me in my moment of softness.
But Robin, you said happily that the registries are with us on this one. So
yeah,
this is a pretty big overstretch. I don't think they can get this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just, as you can see in the chat room, I just put in kind of the legalistic 3 points. But I agree with Avery's point. I agree with Marie's point.
Just spotted that. Thank you.
I'm on this one. Because they will. It was their most important number.
It's got to be their most important number. This is what they've wanted. This is GPML, you know, son of GPML, ghost of GPML. They can't have it. So. Okay.
All right.
Cool.
So shall we move on to, and let's do 5 and 6 together, because I think they kind of are really the same in some ways. 5, validate contact information for registrants and who is. And 6, all registrars active in new GTLD registrations must adhere to an amended RAA for all GTLD registrations they sponsor. So the reason I said let's do them together, because I think the answer to both of them is, you know, this is all, these are under discussions right now in the RAA negotiations, and that's where they belong.
But 6 is especially funny because it's sort of, you know, taking the RAA and saying, it doesn't matter if you agree to it. It doesn't matter if you have another contract. If you're going to handle new GTLDs, your contract is different now. And that seems, even to the non-lawyer me, particularly strange and almost impossible to do. I mean... On contractual law, these people already have a set of requirements, and we're going to add another set of requirements on their contract without adhering to any of the processes on the amendment of contract. But, of course, I'm not a contract lawyer.
And neither am I. I'm a trademark lawyer and First Amendment, so I don't know.
Well, I mean, no, I think...
It seems like nonsense.
I mean, it's just completely one-sided, and, you know, these new terms of contract are being unilaterally imposed upon these registrars, and that's not fair, and can you even do that? I mean... Registrars aren't party to this. I don't know. I mean, how is this point, you know, how is ICANN saying, yes, they must do this, suddenly going to change the terms of an existing contract?
I'm much more concerned about number five, the idea that through some back door we might suddenly be validating all WHOIS contact information, which includes a physical address.
Yeah.
Where we've gotten so far in the RAA that we're going to be validating email or phone, depending on what the cultural, at least this is what the registrars are proposing, depending on really what the cultural norm is where the registrar is located. So I just would hate to see number five become the backdoor opening of validation of all contact data, which is not what the WHOIS review team says, which is not generally what the community wants, but obviously it's something they've been wanting for a long time at the IPC and DC.
I agree with you on principle, but again, I think an easy way to sort of get rid of this is to say, well, you know, they're talking about this right now in the RAA, and that's where that discussion belongs.
So I agree completely. This is one of those sentences that says, happily, this is already under discussion. Go work in the existing process.
But I absolutely agree with you. I mean, I would hate for this to actually happen. We don't care about this issue. I just think we've got an easier argument rather than, you know, attacking it on its head.
Yep.
It'd be a boon for lawyers.
Pardon?
Because obviously at a certain point you're going to register everything through a lawyer.
Well, then why am I objecting? I'll get lots of business.
Exactly.
That was what, 10 years ago, I think I said, you know, it's not fair that only, you know, those people rich enough to have lawyers should be allowed to have privacy.
Yeah.
And it's still not fair. So I'm with you, Avery. Not fair. So, yeah, no, this one is happily, you know, this is already under discussion. Go use the process.
Yeah.
And we say
That's why they put in six.
Well, they're going to offer lots of incentives to the registrars to sign on to that new contract.
But that's okay.
That's okay.
Because then that's voluntary. I mean... In a sense, by again, the advantage of not being a lawyer is I can guess at it. But, you know, you can't change a contract without them agreeing. So giving them a lollipop to change the contract, that's voluntary then, you know. So, yeah, you wouldn't need six. If you thought that the lollipops they could extend would be sufficient for all of them to naturally agree, then they wouldn't even need six. Seven?
Sounds good.
Seven. Enforce compliance of all registry commitments for standard applications. And I guess when they say standard applications, and I'm guessing they want to differentiate that from community applications. That's a guess. Anybody have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's the usage that's been used, although some people in the community application community would rather standard applications be called business applications.
Hmm. And then, you know, what about ones that are for .lawyer, .llc? Do those count as a standard application?
Oh, yeah.
There's only
two kinds of applications.
So the applications for those that are, you know, you must be a registered lawyer to have a domain. Under that one, ICANN is now going to go in the business of looking up all these bar records and all these different jurisdictions and it's to enforce those compliance. I don't know. See, I'm just imagining that this is extremely burdensome on ICANN to have to go into, you know, how much detail they're going to have to go into to enforcing some of the these agreements or some of these applications, because they were very specific the way things were applied for, that you had to be this, that, or the other in order to be eligible to have a domain there. So, you know, it just seems like it was too far of a field for ICANN to then go into the business of checking up on all of those little details and having the kind of expertise required to enforce those kinds of commitments in the applications. I don't know. I'm not sure I'm making any sense.
I think you sort of are, but first of all, I think that that's going to happen more likely in a community than in a standard. In a sense, compliance can, get itself into, you know, auditing everything all the time, everywhere. It can also work at a slightly higher level of abstraction, where it's making sure that there are practices in place to do that on a periodic basis and following up on complaints. And then that becomes a much more tractable, scalable compliance function. And I think among community applicants, and this is speaking as a part-time employee of one, there is a knowledge that there's going to be a certain level of compliance on that, and we're going to have to deal with it. And I think that ICANN forcing compliance of its contracts. Now, what I don't understand in this one is, how does the word "of all registry commitments" map to the words contained in the contract? I think, obviously, ICANN has to force compliance of its contract. That's how it regulates. It regulates through contract, and the absent leg has been compliance to the contract. And I think almost anyone sort of has to accept that. You sign a contract, you expect a certain amount of compliance to that contract, and if you're caught not doing so, you expect some sort of price to pay. But of all registry commitments, you know, that means anything that was in the application that isn't carried forth to the contract, that application language is subject to contractual interpretations and enforcement. So that's where my issue with 7 becomes. If it was in contracts, I think it's sure, obviously, duh. But of all registry commitments, I don't know what that means.
No, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, that's exactly the point I'm trying to make is, you know.
Sorry.
No, I'm just agreeing. I'm completely agreeing that's a big that's the issue, is that, you know, what exactly must be complied with? Is it every single word that's written in that application, irrespective of whether or not the business decided to go that way, or you know, other reasons for not going that way? They went another direction, perfectly lawful, perfectly legitimate. Nobody's, you know, trying to do anything wrong. But will the words written in that application then be, as you say, turned into contract language that ICANN now has to enforce the compliance with? So I think there's the issue of, you know, how the level of detail that ICANN has to undertake in the enforcement, and then there's also this issue of exactly what is considered a commitment that must be complied with and the enforcement of it ensured. So I think the devil is in the details here. And, you know, we all agree, yes, contracts must be abided by, but the devil is going to be in the details of, well, what is considered a contractual obligation, and to what extent must ICANN go to enforce the compliance of that?
Robin, and everybody, just wondering, if we try to put ourselves in the IPC shoes on this one, it might be that, and I just wanted to see if what the specific means to us, it might be that they're seeing a lot of promises made by registries, new GDL, new registries, to have a lot of heightened intellectual property protection. And they're concerned that that might look very nice on paper, but that it's not going to be embedded in their obligations. I'm just taking a guess here. Because I'd be concerned. If I were on the flip side, I'd be concerned, like, you know, paper's nice, promises are nice, I want to see them. You know, if you're actually using this to get some points and to score higher and to impress, you know, the intellectual property community and all that, great. But are you going to do it?
Yeah.
And if that's the issue, do we object to I'm not sure.
I don't think we have reasonable compliance requirements. But what, okay, you know, let's fight about, let's figure out what's reasonable and what's not reasonable. But I think we can all agree to reasonable compliance.
And reasonable compliance might mean doing the intellectual property protection that they say they're going to do.
Right. I mean, if there are no complaints, maybe you don't need to look as closely at another registry for whom there are many complaints. ICANN should take a closer look there. So, you know, I think that the devil is going to be in the details.
And isn't this sort of a contract issue anyhow? I mean, if you want that, doesn't one then put in their standard contract, this includes all the guarantees made in questions 18, 27, 28, and 29, as stated in application number foo, and they are included? I mean, but then it gets specific, and you know, because the applications do make specific promises in the standard applicant on 27, 28, and 29, I believe it was, about what you're going to do against, you know, malicious abuse, trademark protections, and other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So if they want to include that, they really should be talking about the contract and not enforcing on to the contract.
Can I make a suggestion that it's not clear, that number 7 is not clear to us? Mm-hmm. We want to know what the concern is, and we want to know what exactly they're recommending, because there's lots of which commitments are at issue here. Because we can guess, but of all of these, I think number 7 is the least clear, and in some ways it's the newest of all of them. We haven't seen this one before. There's lots and lots of enforcement of compliance and community applications, but this one's kind of new. I mean, what are they? You know, what's the concern? We don't understand it. If they could present it more clearly, we can evaluate it more easily.
Well, I mean, I guess their concern is going to be that people are right on paper. We've got all these processes and procedures for fighting abuse, but how do you make sure they actually do what they say they're going to do? And I think that's their argument, and they're going to say, we want ICANN standing over their shoulder with a whip, and that's how we're going to make sure they're going to do what they say they're going to do.
And in that case, you put it in the contract.
Right. It belongs in the contract, the final contract. You know, they're kind of trying to negotiate terms of the final contract with all applicants with this demand letter here. That's pretty clever.
No, I think they're going farther than that. I think they're trying to staff the compliance department, capital C, with 1,000 people.
Yeah.
So I think clarity for number 7 would be the best, because this is compliance. This is going farther than contract. So I'm not sure. And plus, I just want to tell you what really sparked something like this, at least some concern, was .jobs, which decided to expand at one point, the type of second-level domains that could come in, and this sparked a massive fight. So they, when I was a registry, I remember talking at length with Dot Jobs, and I don't think it's confidential, but please don't blog it, but their concern that businesses need some amount of flexibility. You can make a lot of commitments and in very good faith enforce all of them, but at some point you may need some flexibility because the business world may change, and you may need to do something a little different. Now, does that apply to, you know, intellectual property protections during sunrise? Probably not, because that's, you know, immediate and on the short term. We're talking 4, 5, 10 years out. So this may be much more of one for the new GTLD registries.
Another one to warn on this one, though. This is one that ALAC will love.
ALAC would love?
This is one where ALAC probably wouldn't be in our corner.
I don't know what our corner is. I don't know what the question is.
Well, that's beside that too.
Okay.
But the concern, I think, is that, you know, ALAC loves the idea of forcing contracts and putting that burden on ICANN, and, you know, that's ICANN was one of main responsibilities, and so I think that they might, I see why they might want to seize onto this one.
Yes. A compliance department that looks like the SS would be a good thing.
Okay. All right, so shall we do our last one, number 8. Expand trademark claim services to cover at least strings previously found to have been abusively registered or used. Not only no, but hell no, would be my response. you know, again, this is just a complete overreach. It's just because somebody somewhere at some point in time infringed a trademark doesn't mean all future uses of that trademark will necessarily also be infringing. It prevents all sorts of lawful and legitimate non-commercial speech and critical speech, and this is a prior restraint on domains. They want to, it doesn't say this here, but what they want is for people to have to come forward and affirmatively prove that they have a right to use a particular trademark word in a string once somebody else has used it improperly. So this is incredibly expansive and, you know, violates everything about due process and free speech and all sorts of legal principles that nobody at ICANN cares about, so no problem.
Can I ask a question on this one?
Yes.
When a trademark, a UDRP, or whatever claim is made, is it specific to the registrant?
Yes.
And their nature and what they're doing with it, or is it, oh, this is a word that no one must have used, or is that what you already said? But when a UDRP comes, is the ruling specific to this word being used in this instant by this registrar?
Right. That's exactly
yes.
right. So that's yes. what such an
context.
Incredible expansion.
And circumstance,
okay.
yeah.
And, you know, what is it, 70-80% are defaults? So, you know, they've almost got an incentive to register their mark and then file a claim against themselves and default, and then they can put their mark on this list. Nobody can ever
do that.
But guys, this is passionate to them. This is number 4 in a revised way. So, you know, it's a variation of number 4. So let me share how sincerely they believe this, that from their point of view, they have to defend the same strings again and again and again and again. And so here, again, I think they're trying to cover the Yahoo Financial, the Yahoo Singles, the Yahoo, the Facebook this, the Facebook that. They deal with hundreds of these a day, because I served with Susan from Facebook on the Who Is Review team, and she's very sincere in what she has to handle every day. So I just want to let you know, this goes back to the very core of what they do every day, and they believe they're trying to protect their clients from undue costs, unfair costs, because it's the same strings again and again and again. So here I think we go back to first principles, that a UDRP was never, never intended to be a global string protection. It is context. It is individual registrants and the circumstances of the registration, and lots and lots and lots of defaults on generic words, on common last names, on words we use every day. So it would just be a massive expansion of the trademark clearinghouse. But if you make fun of them, they're going to take it really personally. I just want to let you know this is actually very sincere on their part. I don't agree with it, but it's very, very sincere.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that they don't have legitimate concerns. The problem is they are overreaching in the solutions that they propose that completely prevent any sort of non-commercial speech or critical speech. It's just, you know, so it's like they're not really fair in their responses to how to deal with the problem. I'm willing to admit that they have a legitimate issue, but they don't seem to be willing to admit that we have some legitimate concerns here as well. They just cast them aside and say, well, they don't matter. We can have this broad overreaching claim because our interests are more important than your interests. At least that's how it feels.
I hate to say it. I have to go. So I apologize for leaving the meeting early.
Oh, no, that's okay. I mean, I think we've gone through all eight of them, so I think we've you know, sort of figured out, at least had a good discussion to get us started with a response ourselves on this. So, no, I
have a quick question. Before you leave, Kathy, quick question. Do we know everything we need to know about how to participate remotely?
No, we don't know anything about that.
Well, do we know how many people we want to participate remotely? Do we know if we want me to be one of them and just for the 3 hours, for the whole meeting? I mean... No, we don't know how to do it.
Because I'm interested in as much of the meeting as I can get, because I also care about the technical issue I think they're discussing the rest of the time.
Okay.
Well, then you should be able to remote participate as well.
So I'm going to search on that, but we just need to make sure that we gather the information. And I don't know why we'd be limited to one remote participant.
Yeah, no, I'm sure we can.
To one. Then we should have a tag team.
Well, should we let Robin coordinate, or do we all want to bother Fadi individually?
Oh, no, I intend to talk to Fadi.
What's that?
Yeah, I'm happy to.
I think it should go through Robin.
Yeah, I'm happy to try to coordinate our participation. And so we've got, you know, a few people who can potentially participate remotely. Kathy and Avery and myself.
When is this, by the way?
Pardon me?
When is this?
Thursday and Friday. This Thursday,
okay.
Friday in Brussels. So, and that's all I know. I don't really
know
any more details, but I will get them. I
can't do it. I'm on a plane, and then I'm in Baku.
Yeah, okay.
I'm already flying on Thursday.
Okay. I know. The timing of this was really, really unfortunate. Same thing with Konstantinos. He's flying to Baku on this time as well.
And I assume Friday's on his way, which is...
The only civil society is going that early.
So I think that's great. Robin, if you can negotiate not just for us to be there for the 3 hours, but for the whole thing, if
absolutely.
They can accommodate
us. Yeah, I expect we can do that. It won't be a problem.
I'm willing to go into the IQ. Which I think will be a better connection.
Kathy, would you mind taking a first stab at the draft of our response based on these?
No, I wasn't taking notes for that purpose. I'm sorry, Robin.
That's okay. No, that's okay. I've got notes and I can do it. I just thought you
we'll have a transcript.
Yeah, we will.
I'd be happy to edit and amplify this.
Well, I mean, I've got notes. I'm happy to take a first stab and I'll send it out to the list later today, and then hopefully you guys can send any comments or edits and changes and other people on the list, because I'd like to get it out at least in the next day or two.
Robin, are you able to participate in the meeting on Thursday and Friday?
Well, I can, you know, probably participate in some of it, but it's, you know, going to be 2 o'clock in the morning my time.
Right.
Realistically, how, you know, and if I'm, you know, if I'm still sick, it's been... I haven't been able to risk the cold yet, so I've been sleeping a lot.
Yeah, the only way to do these things is to do a mental travel and to basically shift your schedule for those days to the other locale And I tend to see it as, and I'm not suggesting you should do it, Robin, but I tend to see it as traveling without the discomfort of an airplane.
That's a good way to look at it, yeah. Okay.
And I like our stance of being, you know, observers, but not full and equal participants. Just observers.
Yeah.
And Robin, if you could ask Fadi for that equal meeting, probably virtually. You know, we can all come in by Skype or something sometime after he gets it back from IGF. That would be great.
Yeah, I mean, I did ask him, I did send an email to him, I guess, Friday, putting that out. But I don't know, for some reason he doesn't respond to my emails. It's a little weird.
Okay. I do have to run. Thank you, everybody.
Yes,
and safe travels, Avery.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks. That's right. I'm not going to see any of you in Baku.
No, I'm not going either.
No.
Oh, bummer.
I know. Yes.
I know. And the thing is, I've always wanted to go to Azerbaijan. Like, that's the mad thing. But anyway.
No, yeah. No, I'll be here, so I can focus on this. All right. So did anyone else have anything on this, or do we think we have a pretty good path forward? I'll take a stab at a draft of this today, send it around to the list, and follow up with Fadi trying to coordinate our remote participation.
Oh.
Anyone else have anything?
That'd be terrific.
Great. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for dialing in and lending me your thoughts and ideas on this so we can hammer this out. I really appreciate it. And also for staying so long on the call. I didn't realize it would go this long. But
we're having so much fun.
I really appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks for rescheduling it, Robin.
Oh, no, no problem at all. No problem at all. No, they just had a little snafu on NICAN's side, but they got it fixed now, I think.
All right. Well, talk to you both soon, I hope.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Talk
to you guys later.
Bye-bye. Okay. Well, I guess this marks the end of the Adobe. I have copied out the chat and sent it to the three of you that were participating on this. And I think it's been good having Adobe. I hope more people use it in the future. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you, Gisela.